About 2 years ago, I conceived of a run. I wanted to do something that pushed me to the edge of my potential. I really wanted to test to see how far I could go. It's kind of a celebration of human endeavor and mental resilience, physical resilience. So I decided to run every county of the UK. So you have states, and I guess you have districts within states. We have counties. I start in a county called Cornwall, which is down in the south of our country, kind of surfing and fishing. And then I run up through every county each day, going across two, three, and sometimes four county borders. So it's a long run. It's a long run. Every day will be about 50K, and it's sort of pretty much back to back.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, my guest this week is Matt Bagwell. Matt's an ultra runner. He's a performance coach. He's a breathwork instructor and a coach. And in September of 2021, he's going to set out on what he calls the run of his life. It's a run that he created, and he named it Run the Country Ultra. Now, the country he's running in is Great Britain, and he's going to be doing the equivalent of 21 consecutive ultra marathons through the month of September. He's going to have a total of 1,050 kilometers, 10,232 meters of vertical, and that comes up to being about 16% higher than climbing Mount Everest. I'll talk more about Matt's run and his episode in a minute, but I want to take some time and talk about last episode. Some of the changes that are coming to the show. Mainly, I want to make it easier for you to get in touch and to talk back. I would like this to not just be a one-way conversation of me talking to people that that I may or may not know. I want to be able to hear back from you. So I set up an email, ultramindsetpodcast@gmail.com. Just give you a way to get back a message to me via email, if that's what you choose. And questions, comments, anything you'd like to say, it makes it a little bit more than just me talking to you. I can have some response back from whatever you'd like to tell me. I also set up a new web address. It's not quite live yet, but it will be coming very, very soon. The web address is ultramindsetpodcast.run, and it will take you directly to the show notes rather than having to go to the website and navigate through the menu at the top. So ultramindsetpodcast.run will take you directly to show notes. That will be live very, very soon, hopefully by the time this publishes, if not just a little bit after. Also coming soon is a voice message board where you can leave comments or questions, and I have some ideas brewing for other ways to use this as well. And this is again, hope to have more than just a one-way conversation, so not only just to get a message by text, but to hear your voice. And so that we'll be talking more about that in future episodes. That is on its way. So if you do like what you hear in this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. I do appreciate your support and the way that you help to make this show better and keep it going. Now, back to Matt. Matt Bagwell, he is an advocate for mental health, and he created this Run the Country Ultra as a way to raise awareness and to raise funds to help people who are struggling with depression. Matt's going to be running through every county in Great Britain. There are 43 counties there. He's going to be running through each one. His goal is he's raising money, wants to raise £105,000 for an organization called CALM, Campaign Against Living Miserably. That's the acronym is CALM. The name of it is Campaign Against Living Miserably. To help people with their mental health, this is an organization that provides services to people who are in need of help. And so I hope you enjoy my conversation with Matt. I think you'll find him a very engaging person. And here is my conversation with Matt Bagwell.
3 or 4 years where I would consider myself to be an ultra trail runner.
Okay. Okay. So how did you make the switch into ultra distances? I mean, what was the appeal there?
I think like a lot of people, I got to the point where I realized I wasn't going any faster in marathons. I ran Boston, which was an absolute privilege. I've run London and various other marathons in Europe. And my pace, I kind of wanted a particular time. And when I PB'd and got that time, it was like, I'm not getting any younger. I'm not getting any faster. Even if I were to wear Nikes, I think I pretty much kind of netted out. And so I thought I'd just give up marathons altogether, to be honest, Eric. It was like, okay, I'll just go back to triathlon and keep it at the 10K or in 21K. And then discovered ultra. Unwittingly, really, I think the sport, obviously, as you know, has become increasingly popular, increasingly available. Mm-hmm. It's been popularized by people like Rich Roll, and you know the book and other people's publications and podcasts. So I kind of fell into it. It's slow. It's kind of like a nice pace. It's connecting with nature. And now I consider myself an ultra runner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's for me was the appeal was that even when I was young and I ran in my 20s, it was I wasn't a fast runner, and so I was more of a middle of the pack then. But now that I'm older, it's like yes, this is I can go at a leisurely pace. It's as fast as I can, but yeah. It's the pace for running an ultra marathon is not nearly what you would expect for the shorter distances.
Absolutely. And I think also the motivation to do it for me is different. I'm not trying to beat time. I'm just trying to complete these things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm quite comfortable now being overtaken by young people with very little equipment in very lean clothing who are sort of like mountain goats who are sort of sprinting mm-hmm. up and down while I'm walking, and I'm okay with that. My ambitions when I do ultras now is to take the time, enjoy the community, complete the run. I think it's a very different motivation.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I've never been to England, so I mean, I just from only from what I've seen on television or read in books, what is the trail? What are the trail opportunities like there? I mean, I know that there's a classification called fell running. Right. There was, and so I know you've got some places where there's elevation, but is there a lot of availability for trails?
It's not in the same way that you'd have in the US, in so much as you know. I'm imagining that England could probably fit into one of your states, and I've spent some time in the US, and I've always mm-hmm. been surprised at how long it takes me to drive anywhere because the country is so enormous and beautiful and you have so much variety. I've been East Coast, West Coast and mid US as well. And you do have so much availability. However, even though we've got a much smaller territory, there are some mountainous areas, both in England and Wales and in Scotland. And there's plenty of available trails. And we also have an amazing coastline. So you don't have to drive very far. I mean, in terms of a US drive, I mean, these are hardly road trips, but you're never really more than 3 hours from the coast in any direction. So the coast of England is absolutely stunning, and there's coastal paths all the way around. So there are people who will run the circumference. And then there are people who will do, say, Land's End to John O'Groats, which is about 920 miles. Something of that magnitude, about 1500K, I guess, 1400K. And that's from the top of Scotland right down to Cornwall, which is in the south. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to navigate through bridle paths. We have plenty of those canal paths. We have a whole canal system here in the UK. So you have to work a little harder on navigation, Eric, to be honest. But it is quite possible to spend a day in the trails and have an amazing time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the race that you were talking about that runs the length of England, I've read other runners who've done that. That's a fairly famous.
I think it's like a
bucket list race.
It's there to be done, right? So there are several in the UK. So there's the Pennines Way, which is about 263 miles, and I think the current record for that is held by an American. And so people do that as a multi-stage. That's a three-day race typically, if you're very, very good. Sort of mere mortals like myself might take a week to do something like that. Land's End to John O'Groats. Some people do something, called the coast to coast. So they'll run from, say, the east coast to the west coast. Okay. Again, in sort of miles, that's probably not much more than 260 miles, something like that. And then Land's End to John O'Groats is just one of those iconic things that English people, sports people particularly, sort of see as a challenge. So there's a lot of cyclists who'll do that for charity. There are lots of runners who may do that as a multi-stage event. I think if you're doing that route, you're going to see sort of people carrying crosses and people in wheelchairs and people doing all sorts of amazing endeavors in order to raise money, particularly for charity. It's pretty much like the known charity route here in the UK.
Okay. Which is probably why here in middle of the United States, I've seen people who have mentioned that race at least, and people who've done it. And so it's come. So it was something I had seen. Now you are putting on, or you're doing a race in just a little bit. And you said it was like going to be the greatest run of your life.
Absolutely.
Coming up in a few weeks. So talk a little bit about that. I was kind of intrigued by that.
Sure, Eric. So about 2 years ago, I conceived of a run. I wanted to do something that pushed me to the edge of my potential. I really wanted to test to see how far I could go. It's kind of a celebration of human endeavor and mental resilience, physical resilience. So I decided to run every county of the UK. So you have states, and I guess you have districts within states. We have counties. Mm-hmm. And in England, which is one of the three countries, or four actually, in Great Britain, we have 43 counties. And these things each have their own sort of cultures. And so you can really tell as you move from county to county that there's a change, a subtle change of sort of dialect and culture. Mm-hmm. So the run that I've planned is 1,050 kilometers. It's 21 ultra marathons across the course of 26 days. So in less than a month, I'll run the equivalent of Land's End to John O'Groats. And the reason why I didn't run that route is because it is so popular, Eric. I wanted to do something that was quite unique, quite differentiated. And also, I'm doing it for a charity and a cause where we really want to connect communities across boundaries. So there's a lot of local charities and running organizations, and we want to sort of bring those organizations and people together and connect them across those county borders. So there are 43 counties. I start in a county called Cornwall, which is down in the south of our country, kind of surfing and fishing. And then I run up through every county each day, going across 2, 3, and sometimes 4 county borders. So it's a long run. Every day will be about 50K, and it's sort of pretty much back to back.
Wow. Okay. That is a pretty great endeavor. Now the organization was called Calm, if I remember right. Can you talk a little bit about
what that is?
I thought that was an interesting acronym.
Campaign Against Living Miserably is the organization I'm running it for. They're a charity that has a helpline that intervenes when people get into a sort of a crisis situation. They're in the business of suicide prevention, Eric. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that, you know, we have to be mindful that we don't want to create triggers here in the content, but they work specifically around men's mental health.
Okay.
Addressing the stigmas that perhaps mean that men are not as comfortable to talk about how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And they are also there at the end of a call line or a phone line when people get into a crisis situation. And it's a cause very close to my heart. In my earlier adult life, I went through a couple of bouts of depression, which got pretty serious. Mm-hmm. And I was able to use running and a variety of other tools to recover from that. So the purpose of the run is to raise as much awareness as we possibly can, to have a more open conversation about positive mental health and the role that running plays in that for very many people. Mm-hmm. And also to raise funds to keep that call line open and, more and more calls being answered.
Yes. Well, and now you're a coach. You went through that and you're also coaching other men in mindset and also I wanted to talk about, if you have more to say about your work in mental health, I'd love to hear about that. But how does the breath work fit into that strategy as well?
Okay. So I think that managing my performance, both mental and physical, is a little bit like having a bento box, Eric. So like a Japanese bento box, and it's got mm-hmm. different compartments in it. And across the course of a day or a week, I will do different things in order to maintain positive mental well-being, particularly positive mental health. And those are things that I've had to learn. You and I could both probably testify to the benefits of running, right?
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. A very active community, the ultra community especially, is particularly friendly. It's much more about pushing the human endeavor than it is about necessarily an individual's specific performance. It's not so much about the pace, but it's about the experience.
Yes.
Not in all cases, of course, as competitive ultra running, but it is a very strong community. I think most people who run ultra are very well aware of their connection to nature. You know, when you and I go long, and particularly when we go over, say, 50 or 60 kilometers, you know, we're going to be very in touch with our bodies and very in touch with the surroundings, right?
Yes.
Because it's a deeply connected experience. But other things that I also do, I always do a morning practice. And that will look like a bit of mindfulness and meditation. I live by the sea, so I'm able to go and see the ocean every day. I may do some cold water bathing. I'm a little scared of cold water, but I will go in. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily for very long.
So was that in the ocean or?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'll swim in a stream or I'll swim in lakes, but I've got the ocean right here. So even in the winter, I'll put on a winter sort of wetsuit and get in if I can. And then the other part of this is breath work, and that's becoming increasingly popular, increasingly accessible, and more people are finding out about it. So as you say, I am an instructor and coach in breath work, and I've worked with thousands of people from elite athletes, including Team GB and Olympians, to everyday men like myself and women, who want to use breath work to improve their health, manage their anxiety, reduce stress. So it's increasingly popular. And I've been very lucky to be a part of that community too.
Mm-hmm. So system that you trained in, I had an introduction from a running coach online that referred me to Patrick McKeown and his book. And so I read the book and have started some of that practice as well. So wanted to talk about the athletic part of it, but about the mindfulness and the mindfulness and the mental and physical health benefits of the breath work that you do. And, what is it for most of us? And like, I'll just say for myself, when I exercised for all of my life, I would always breathe through my mouth.
Right.
Most of the day, I'd breathe through my nose. But if I was doing anything that required much effort, I always opened my mouth to get in more air. So
that's not unusual,
right? But then also the other part of just breathing day to day, it's a there are people who may not be running the kinds of distances we are. And so talk a little bit about the health benefits and the, also the performance.
Sure. So if we keep things super simple, as we're breathing, we're obviously inhaling oxygen and exhaling carbon dioxide. Oxygen transports through the alveoli, which are a little bit like leaves on a tree. They're the sort of the small sort of parts of our lungs. Then go in through to the blood, carried by red blood cells to the cells and the muscles of our bodies, right? So, and in there we have a sort of a factory, a powerhouse, which is creating energy. When the muscles are using energy, they're able to breathe aerobically. That means with oxygen. Or anaerobically, which means without oxygen. And we're capable of doing both. So if we hold our breath, we're still able to use our muscles, but we obviously begin to feel fatigue. Now, from an athletic perspective, when the muscle tires and there's not enough available oxygen, it creates a byproduct called lactic acid. And you and I both understand what lactic acid is, Eric. It's that sort of dull feeling in the legs that you get at about 25K, where you're kind of like, okay, this is going to be a long day in the office.
Yeah.
And what's basically happening there is the muscles are not getting enough oxygen. So they're working anaerobically, which is without oxygen. They're using sort of calories to burn, and they're creating a byproduct, which is lactic acid. So when we improve the way we breathe, whether that's through nasal breathing or whether it's through developing sort of greater lung volume, for example, we're able to oxygenate our blood more effectively, which means that we can manage that lactic threshold. So the work that I do with athletes particularly is to make sure that they're able to balance the way that they breathe. They're able to breathe more proficiently. They're able to breathe more towards the diaphragm, so lower into their body, in order that they can maximize the availability of oxygen. The positive benefit for mental health is that when you have plenty of oxygen going to the brain, and especially the prefrontal cortex, the front part of the brain, that's the part of the brain that processes our decisions. That's where we make decisions, and it's also where we are able to project forward thinking, i.e. thinking about the future. So when it's highly oxygenated, we're able to make decisions clearly, and we're able to think positively about the future, whether it's the next hour or the next sort of 2 days or the next 2 months. When our blood is not as available to the brain, when it's not as oxygenated, then we lose control of the prefrontal cortex. And the consequences of that are that we get that kind of mind fog. Mm-hmm. And you know what it's like when you start to feel a little stressed, a little anxious, you start to make poor quality decisions, you begin to think a little pessimistically about the future. And so you've got this sort of like upward and downward spiral. Mm-hmm. So if I'm able to help people positively oxygenate again, then I'm able to help them have a clear mind and make clear decisions. So from a performance perspective, I'm able to help people with clear thinking. And from a physical performance perspective, I'm able to help them optimize how they use oxygen. You're also, in your body, you have two parts to your nervous system. So your nervous system is made up of a sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic. The sympathetic nervous system is the one that we're using when we're doing exercise, for example. It's very active, and it's kind of our on state. The parasympathetic is our relaxed state, the off state, and we spend way too much time in the sympathetic nervous system. And again, that creates fatigue. So I'm able to work with people to help them move very quickly into the parasympathetic nervous system. The net of all of this, Eric, is that it is about optimizing people's performance when they are doing things like running, but also help them in recovery. To your earlier point, it's not just athletes. I work with people who, you know, might do a little bit of light running. They wouldn't consider themselves to be runners necessarily. They might play a little bit of sport. They might take some sort of movement as leisure. But I can work with anyone, and they can all optimize the way that they breathe.
Mm-hmm. So it gets, you're, you know, getting into the prefrontal cortex. A focus on the breath. I mean, most of us breathe. I mean, most of us, I think, don't think about how we breathe. I pretty much didn't. I mean, I just go through life and breathing, since it is so much automatic. What is it you help people to move into being conscious?
Okay, so the simplest way to start to work with breath is first simply to prime for nasal breathing. We spend an awful lot of time breathing through our mouths, and mm-hmm. I'll be honest, even as a runner, I still do. But if we're people who do sort of a lot of Zoom calls for business, or we're presenting, or we're on the telephone a lot, or, you know, many of us now are sort of remote working or doing these kind of hybrid roles, and you do a lot of sport, you're going to be breathing a lot through your mouth. Mm-hmm. Typically, what's happening there is people are breathing quite shallow into the upper part of the chest. And what we need to do is help people to move the breath down towards the diaphragm, which is kind of in the lower belly. Our lungs extend all the way down our body. They're not just sort of at the top of our chest. And so the first thing to do is just to become conscious of our breathing and to just simply breathe in and out through the nose. The second part of it is then to slow down the respiratory rate. So we're often just breathing really rapidly at about 16, 17 breaths per minute. I would normally ask people to start to breathe maybe 10 breaths per minute. And that's a 4-4 count, Eric. So if people are breathing in and out through the nose for a count of in for four and out for four, the immediate impact of that is they move themselves into something we call homeostasis. Homeostasis is probably better understood by just calling it balance. So your blood chemistry is always imbalanced. If you're running around and doing lots of sort of activity, your inhalation and exhalation will be out of balance. Your body chemistry will be out of balance. It's completely natural. If you breathe an equal inhale and exhale, you'll move into the parasympathetic nervous system and into a state of homeostasis. So it's incredibly calming. So that's the first step, just to breathe for 2 or 3 minutes, in for four and out for four. And then the second most important thing that I work with people to do is help them to draw the breath consciously down towards their stomach. So many breath practices are about increasing the strength of the diaphragm and also making sure that they're getting the full sort of extension through their thorax, so they're getting the maximum amount of oxygen into their body. I have a little mantra, slow and low. So breathe nice and slow. Think about breathing really low. And I know we're on a podcast, but I would say the best way to do it is just to place your hands on what we know as the external obliques. So if you think about where your abs are, the external obliques are sort of just above your trouser line and just below your ribs, out at the sides of your body. And if you place your hands there, you can imagine yourself breathing into the hands. It's a biomechanical breath. And again, for 2 or 3 minutes, you can just guide the breath consciously down low into your lungs. If you do that for 5 to 6 weeks, you will subconsciously start to breathe more deeply.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I started out kind of exercising as a cyclist, and hadn't been doing it for quite a while. And I would go up a hill and feeling like my ribs would not, you know, I was breathing from the top of my chest, feeling like my ribs, if I could just make them expand more, I could get a good breath of air.
Sure.
And I was that typical person you're talking about, breathing from the top of my lungs.
An exercise I would say in that kind of instance is, you know, when we go for a gentle run, if you and I were running together, Eric, I'd say every kilometer, when we get to 800 meters, let's try to nasal breathe for the last 200 meters. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not going to be easy. The first few seconds, we're going to feel a little claustrophobic. And at first, it's like quite stressful. It's positive stress. But then with practice, you can maybe run 100 meters breathing through the nose. And then in time, as you build it up, it's like anything. It does take time. You'll be able to spend more time nasal breathing than necessarily breathing through your mouth. And your body just adapts to breathing more deeply. Mm-hmm. You know, we all find hills difficult, Eric, whether we're on a bike or whether we're on the trails, right? Hills are great when you're at the top of them, and they can be quite good fun when you're coming down them, but they're really hard work on the way up. And, you know, it's all about doing the training. And, you know, no one I teach or I coach or instruct you know, naturally just flies up the hills. That the majority of people I work with are not Kilian Jornet. So they need to train. And what I say is just do tiny increments. And then what you will do is, you know, your body will naturally adapt to open up the availability of the lungs. And the more oxygen we can get into our body, the better. I think a lot of people think that if they breathe really fast through the mouth and they gasp for air, they'll get more oxygen. But mathematically, if you breathe more slowly but take a deeper breath, you actually increase the available oxygen per minute. So it's kind of paradoxical, Eric. The body needs more oxygen, but the mind says just breathe really fast and start panting for breath. It's very suboptimal.
So I guess mathematically, breathing would the volume be the same, but your body is able to actually access it when you're breathing slower? Is that the?
Well, if you're breathing more low into your lungs, that's where, if you imagine a tree, Eric, the trachea is a bit like the trunk of a tree, and then we have two bronchus, the two branches of the lungs. And so for the first third of your lungs, so from your mouth through to the top of your chest, there's really no capacity to exchange oxygen for carbon dioxide. You and I both know when we look at a tree, all the power in the tree is in the leaves, in the canopy, and that's down in our belly. So if we can draw the breath down, that's where all of the work will be done. So that will help. But also, if you do increase the depth of your breath, i.e. take a deeper breath, and you take less breaths per minute, if you do the maths, you can increase the volume of oxygen from, say, 4 liters a minute to something like 8 liters per minute.
So you get more air.
Yeah, exactly. More volume, and you also get higher quality respiratory exchange because it's lower in the body. The final point I'd make is that the nose is really, really very, very specialized. It can filter the air, it can heat the air, and it filters out bacterias. We can understand, and viruses. We can understand why that's important. But it also adds nitric oxide. So the cells of the nose are able to create nitric oxide. You might know this if you go to have dental treatment as laughing gas. It's not quite as potent as when you go to the dentist.
Right.
But what it does do is it is anti-inflammatory. So it heals the lungs, but it also opens up the capillaries. So we're able to create a gas in our nose that heals and optimizes our lung performance. You cannot do this with the mouth. The mouth isn't really a part of the respiratory system, Eric. So many, many people who come to me have conditions and symptoms because they're mouth breathers.
Yeah, and I've seen some studies of people that they've done with breathing only through the mouth and some of the negative effects that it can have on just health in general, let alone running.
Even very simply, you get more dental problems if you breathe through your mouth than if you combine it with nasal breathing. It's very simple things that we can change. And very often, sleep quality, mental health, physical stamina, managing fatigue, the root cause is bad breathing.
Well, I thought it was interesting when you were talking about the nitric oxide in the nasal capacity, reducing inflammation. As runners like that, so that kind of set off a trigger in my mind of, oh my goodness, not having so much, the inflammation that we produce by running long distances.
Exactly.
Any little edge we could get to, like not have cramps, that seems like a good advantage.
And that's certainly one of them. The other that's in my bento box that I mentioned earlier is that I'm plant-based. And, many plant-based athletes and many plant-based athletes in ultramarathon. It's not, unusual. But again, the reason why I went plant-based in the first instance was to reduce inflammation because my diet is predominantly unprocessed food. And plant-based, my time to recovery is incredibly optimal. The combination of good breath work and a great diet, keeps me ready to run again, basically.
Right. Yeah, and I've talked to quite a few plant-based runners, and that's one of the main reasons that they've done it is just to reduce the inflammation.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you then become increasingly aware of animal animal agriculture, especially, and environmental impacts of some of those processes. You can't really be in the plant-based community and not cognizant of that. Mm-hmm. But certainly from a performance perspective, I've seen the improvements significantly in terms of my stamina and recovery time from a combination of good mental practices and breath work, and you know, time on my feet because I don't suffer from inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that that struck me about breath work is that I guess I'd like to hear your opinion that if we exhale quickly, we're losing carbon dioxide too quickly that is needed to actually access the oxygen into our cells. Is that something that you have looked
so
at?
So if you do inhale and exhale at a rapid velocity, then you can go into a state of hyperventilation.
Okay.
And there are some breath practices which specifically activate the consequences of that. You can sense mild euphoria, for example. And it's been popularized as a breathing technique.
Wim Hof. Yeah.
famously.
A lot of us have heard that, yeah.
And I've trained under Wim Hof, so I've trained under several masters, and he is one of them. And I think there's an absolute place for that, but it's to be done in sort of small doses, right? You wouldn't want to be breathing like that all of the time. Mm-hmm. Extended periods of hyperventilation could be potentially less beneficial. Let's put mm-hmm. it that way. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right to be mindful about it. I think, you know, start with the gentle stuff, particularly if you've got preconditions going into it. You do need to take these things seriously, because you are playing with the appearance of blood oxygen and you are playing with your resistance to carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. So you need to go into this mindfully. So that's why when I work with clients, I always make the science very accessible, and I'm always incredibly transparent about what is going on. You know, and we take it gently. Breathwork is not a performance sport. It, you know, there are no medals for the longest breath holds. That's not my sport. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe if you're a free diver, these
free diver, free divers might, yeah.
Yeah, but for me and the clients that I work with, you know, it's about taking it gently a step at a time. There's an incredibly strong amount of benefits just from doing the simple stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've noticed that. That is something that's recent for me. I've been doing some breath work and trying to slow down my breathing and breathing through my nose when I run. And you know, I have noticed benefits, but it's one that I've also don't worry too much. I'm not trying to get to, you know, a certain, there's not a goal. It's just I'm trying to improve my life, and that's
taking
it gradually.
Yeah. And I think it's, realistically, it is not a panacea either, Eric. It has to be seen in combination with other things. I was working with a client last week who said that they wanted to run up hills more easily. And I don't have a magic wand that I can suddenly wave and just make somebody run up hills. It's like, okay, you need to do some hill reps. You know, the stuff that mm-hmm. we all know, it's like, okay, break that hill down into 6 200-meter bursts and then turn around and go back down. Don't try and run up a huge mountain range and expect that that's going to go easily. You know, it takes time to condition your body for these things. Mm-hmm. Breath work isn't sort of just a one trick answer. It's not like that. It's to be done in combination. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not the only way to manage your mental health. There are other ways: connecting with people, connecting with nature, talking to friends, being meditative. You know, it's a combination of practices, I think, to optimize mindset.
Yes, and that's a very good point, because so many times we'll fixate on one thing. I mean, we want to change something, and we see and people do this in diets all the time. You know, they find, you know, of course marketing comes into that. Here's the one thing that you know, or the a list of five things that you need to do to change this, and so you know, you're talking about your bento box. We put ourselves into the bento box and we kind of live in that one, in one compartment, and we ignore some of the others to our
detriment. That's absolutely right. What I like about the sport that you and I both love, Eric, is that you don't need an incredible amount of equipment for this sport. Trail running, as long as the trails are available and you're doing it safely and you have appropriate equipment, then it's pretty accessible. Mm-hmm. And I would wish that the trails were more accessible to more people, and that people enjoyed what you and I experienced. But it's pretty accessible. But what it is also is it kind of is quite reductionist. You know, you can't blame the bike. Because you don't have this is about the body.
Yes.
And nature. It kind of becomes quite binary, right? I think that's what I love about ultra, is that you get pretty connected to your physicality and the context very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. You can't really blame the tools.
No, no.
You just have to work with facets of your body. And understand and respect the environment that you're running through. But it's pretty binary, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to your upcoming run. What kind of preparation have you done? Besides the normal, is there any kind of mindset work that you've done to kind of get yourself ready, or looking forward to what you'll do to get through that?
Yep. There's been an awful lot of running. I've been preparing for this run for nearly 2 years. It was meant to be last year. The pandemic obviously meant that wouldn't have been appropriate, safe, mm-hmm. and certainly wouldn't have been able to be something other people could have been involved in. So it was postponed. There has been a lot of mental preparation, Eric, and that comes through testing. So I've done a lot of test runs. Mm-hmm. The maximum I've done is I did 7 days of running, which ended up about 6.5 ultra marathons,
okay.
300 kilometers in a week, which is quite a long distance. Mm-hmm. And that tested both my mind and body. The good thing about it was I now have the self-belief that I can do this. So I was able to go into that process of beginning my recovery midway through the run. So I run about 35 kilometers, something like that. And I'm already starting to think about my recovery for the following day. Mm-hmm. There's a whole process to how the day works. And I'm very fortunate to have a support team. And, they keep me hydrated and keep me fueled as I'm running. And then when we come off the run, there's kind of a limited amount of time to get nutrition sorted out, get massages done, and then get to sleep. Sleep is the best tool for recovery, even better than breath work. But mentally, knowing that I could run 300K in a week means that I know that I can run 1,100 kilometers in a month. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if I've pre-auditioned how I'm going to feel when I complete it.
Right.
And as long as the body plays along, I know the mind is going to be strong enough. Mm-hmm. The second thing to mindset, Eric, is that I'm not doing this run on my own. I don't want to be alone for a month. Mm-hmm. I don't intend to be alone for a month. I've made sure that there are people running with me every day, whether they're joining for 5K or 10K or half marathon or the whole day. No one's running the whole thing, but I'll have runners with me every day. And I'm sure we're going to have great conversations like this one, mm-hmm. because we're running at a gentle pace. We can talk. And that's a great distraction. But I also know that I'm going to build some really very strong friendships and have lots of really interesting conversations along the way. So knowing that people are coming along and knowing that there'll be hundreds of people and thousands who hear about this is how you kind of set that positive mindset.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you're doing this as a fundraiser. So, and you had also said that if people wanted to join in virtually and support you, that they could do that. So talk a little bit about what your vision is for the extended community.
Well, if people are in the UK, then they can go to Run the Country Ultra. That's the name of the run, runthecountryultra.com. And all of the runs are there, and people can just register with any one of those runs. So it's all for free. And as I say, they could run 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever they want on a day. There's also a run on the 5th of September, which is a virtual run, and there'll be another one on the 1st of October, which is the final day of the run. So okay. There are virtual runs, and people can do them internationally. And obviously, there's also links in that website to my charity fundraising page. The ambition is to raise £105,000, which I guess is probably about, I don't know, I'm guessing about $140,000. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm an optimist, Eric. I think that once I start running and people start to hear about it, then I'm going to hit some rich veins of generosity. And, you know, it costs £8, about $12 to answer a call from somebody in need. Mm-hmm. And those are life-changing calls. You know, if somebody picks up the phone and answers a call from somebody who's in a desperate situation, then potentially we're going to save lives. So if people do want to get involved, then they can follow me on Instagram, which is Run the Country Ultra, or they can hit up the website and potentially even do the virtual runs.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what about, if someone is listening to this who is struggling, and you've kind of been there, if they kind of identify with where you were at before you were running, what kind of things would you say to them? Or if those of us who have someone in your life or in their lives that could benefit from being in a community or being connected with someplace to help. What can we do to, for those people who have the need to connect here?
If we're talking to the person who is suffering with depression, do talk to other people. Find someone that you can trust to talk to. There are many organizations, talking organizations and helplines. There are many groups that people could potentially find out about and join. But I'm sure in the network of friends and family, there could be somebody. And it's the hardest step, Eric, because you don't often, or I didn't, feel that I wanted to burden people. I didn't want to sort of like bring people down. I didn't think that I was worthy. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I was very loved and very cared about. And so in our communities, even though we may not think it, there will be somebody who will talk to us and support us. And especially men, but not exclusively so, it's really important that, you know, there are conversations about how we're feeling. It's a very English thing to say, how are you doing, Eric? And the answer is, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, and we do that in the United States too.
Yeah, and we need to get beyond that. I think one of the silver linings of a really very destructive and very cruel pandemic is that at least now it's, I think, more socially acceptable to say that you're having a difficult time. Mm-hmm. Many of us did. There was a lot of energy in culture, and there was obviously a lot of crisis across the world. And I think it's more acceptable both personally and professionally to talk about your mental well-being. And that is one of the positive outcomes of the pandemic, if that's okay to say that. Mm-hmm. Secondly, there are many running communities. And it'll be true in the US. It's true across the UK. There's many organizations that may meet once a week, twice a week, where people can just have a run and a chat. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy to find those things on the internet. And the great thing about running communities, from my perspective, not necessarily the people who want to run super fast, but I think in many of these communities, there's a very open-armed, welcoming feel to them, even in the elite running communities as well, actually. Mm-hmm. Because I think many of the people who run are cognizant of the positive mental health benefits.
Yes, yeah.
So that's where I would start. I'd like talk to someone. Don't feel that you have to be alone. And I'd say to any of your listeners, although I'm sort of just a guy in the UK, you know, I'm always online. My breathwork classes are free. I'm always available to have a conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. So if there's no one else that people could turn to, they could always turn to me.
Okay. Great. And I'll get your links, and they'll be in the show notes for this as well.
Sure.
So if people are hearing this, they can find the show notes and get connected with you. You were talking about the running community, and I found especially among trail runners, there's a camaraderie among trail runners, mm-hmm. and an acceptance I am the slowest runner in my group. But they still accept me as a trail runner because I'm out there running. And I'm not the typical, I mean, I'm probably the oldest one in the group as well. I've found very much an acceptance and a place there. And trail runners, I think, and ultra marathon runners, what we face on the trail, and in community, I'm thinking of, you know, ultra marathon races, people, I mean, we put ourselves through that stress, and there are times when it's just, we're not at our best.
Yep.
And the people who are supporting the race will, you know, can see us have a meltdown, can see us struggling emotionally, struggling physically, and come alongside and do what we can to the people around will do what they can to help you out, mm-hmm. and to encourage you. Whether it's all the way from chafing to GI issues to the fact of your mind telling you that you're done and just being crabby. I paced for a woman, and she was running over 100-mile I run in the middle of the night. You know, I said, it was time. I said, you need to take some nutrition. She didn't feel like it. Mm-hmm. And so we had this discussion. Says, I know you don't feel like it, but you need to. I mean, and so it was about a half an hour, and she was pretty much adamant. And I almost, you know, she was not responding to me in a friendly way.
I think I know what you're saying.
Yeah. It wasn't terrible, but I didn't take it personally. I mean, I with being in the trail running community, we get to see kind of the unvarnished, we peel back the layers of civility, I guess,
that's right,
decorum, and we get to see each other that way and accept each other, and so
I think it's very much I totally agree with you, Eric, and I think that we put ourselves in that situation, right? We push ourselves to the edge of what is possible.
Yeah, and we pay money to do it. Yeah.
And we pay money for the privilege, and sometimes we push ourselves too far, and then you see that there are people to support and to catch you when you fall and when you stumble. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the incredible people who marshal and support these events, or whether it's other runners that you're running along with, you know, they'll turn round and pick you up, mm-hmm. and just like you have done, where you're sort of working to support somebody else who's doing the full distance. You know, you'll be told when you need to eat or you need to think differently. You'll be supported. So I think that in that sense, you're right. It's very much a community that knows and understands suffering. We're all a little bit different, us trail runners, because we choose to do this.
Yes.
And so I think it's a very open-armed and open-handed community. Certainly that's been my experience. And that's not to say that fast elites running short distances are not that, because I know that they can also be incredibly kind and accommodating. There's an organization here in the UK, I don't even know if it's international, called Park Run. Mm-hmm. And they do 5K every weekend. And people absolutely love it. And it's a very, very accepting, very open, very democratic and liberal organization. And that is a great place for people to turn up to do 5K on a Saturday morning. So it's not just the ultra community, but it's especially true. I agree with you, Erica, the ultra community. You know, we put ourselves through hell. So when someone says that they're having a hard time in life, mm-hmm. we're pretty accepting of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of, I think, why we do that is so that we can learn, you know, we can learn who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's, and that, uh, uh, I,
I know, you know, people who run 50 miles and you know, they'll do a 50 mile race and feel like, well, I've got more. And then that was me. I said, I got to the end and I said, you know, I didn't quite get to what I was really looking for about myself to learn what I had. And so,
yeah, it's definitely, you do strip back the layers, don't you? As you run long, and we continue to do it year after year, I think it's like peeling away. And I think you do connect I have found that I have connected with possibly my true self. There's still work to do mm-hmm. out on the trails. And that's what I love about it. There's still work to do and there'll always be there. There's always time.
Yes, yes. And I wish I'd found it sooner because I feel like I'm living the best of my life now just because of some of the things that I've been able to deal with through ultramarathon running. So.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Eric, and I'm just delighted that both you and I have discovered it. And I think it's great that you're making, you know, podcasts like this just to make it really, you know, available to people and helping explain why we find this sport particularly exciting.
Yes. And especially if, you know, we talk about mental health and, there are several things that have kind of been, you know, near to my heart. And, you know, you sharing your story about the struggles that you had you know, why you're running this ultra marathon, this one coming up, you know, I appreciate that. That's something that I want to do is to be of help to people who might find this as an inspiration to change their life.
And I'm pretty sure that you are doing that, by putting out the podcast. You will inspire people to take that first 5K or a 10K or to look into the sport. Or maybe even if it's not that they want to run it, maybe they can support somebody else in some way who does the sport. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't run alone. It takes a lot of organization and support and marshals and food stations. There are many people who can get something from ultramarathon without actually having to do the 100 miles.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a good way to, if you're interested in the sport and just showing up and volunteering. I mean, there's always need for people to support the runners out there. All of us who run are very much aware of the fact that we don't run alone.
We don't.
Even if we're in the middle of the night, you don't see anybody else there. You know, you're really not doing it by yourself.
Yeah. And there's nothing better when you're completely broken and at the edge of what is possible, being handed a cup of tea or a sandwich by a smiling face. I mean, that is the difference between winning and losing in ultramarathons. So yeah, even if the running is not for you, then do see if you can get involved in a local event in your area, because it is a very welcoming community and you do get an opportunity to stand in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And give an ultra marathon runner a little bit of encouragement when they most need it.
That's right. That's right. And we all need that. We all need encouragement as we go along.
Exactly right.
Matt, thank you a lot for taking time to talk with me. And I wish you well. I think I've connected with you on Instagram and I looked at your links and I'll post all those in the show notes. And also I'll be looking forward to seeing your progress as you do this, run the country.
Thank you very much, Eric. And then when this is done and next year, when things are a little bit more easy and available, I'm going to get out to the US and maybe you and I can take a run together. That would be awesome.
I would love that.
You never know. I've got a lot of breathwork friends now all across the US. So maybe I need to come and run coast to coast. I hear it's a little further than across England.
A little further than across England, yes. There are some incredible people who are out there doing that kind of thing. We live in Kansas, and so people always think that Kansas is flat. I mean, that's what is known about. In fact, one of our local I live in eastern Kansas, which is even more hilly than most of the state. And someone came to one of our local races from Germany because he'd heard how flat it was.
Right.
And in a 10 mile loop, we have about 1700 foot of elevation gain. And he was signed up for three of those loops. he had a very rude surprise about how not flat Kansas. Now it's like, you know, there are other places in the United States that have a lot more, but yeah, Kansas has that reputation.
Yeah, so 1700 in 10K sounds enough for me, Eric. I'll see you out there on the trails.
Yeah,
we can support one another.
Yes. Thank you a lot. Appreciate it, and I'll let you know when this gets published as well. So,
my pleasure, Eric. It's been a real nice conversation. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
You too. So people always think that Kansas is flat. I mean, that's what is known about. In fact, one of our local, I live in eastern Kansas, which is even more hilly than most of the state. And someone came to one of our local races from Germany because he'd heard how flat it was.
Right.
And and in a 10-mile loop, we have about 1,700 foot of elevation gain, and he was signed up for three of those loops. he had a very rude surprise about how not flat Kansas. Now it's like, you know, there are other places in the United States that have a lot more, but yeah, Kansas has that reputation.
Yeah, so 1,700 in 10K sounds enough for me, Eric. I'll see you out there on the trails.
Yeah,
we can support one another.
Yes. Thank you a lot. Appreciate it, and I'll let you know when this gets published as well.
So. My pleasure, Eric. It's been a real nice conversation. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it too, please take just a minute and send them a link to this episode. And if you enjoy most of our episodes, tell your friends. That's the best compliment you could give us. I truly enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week, and I appreciate the fact that you take time to listen. If you want to get in touch with me, send me a DM on Instagram at Eric Dieter. That's ericdeeter. Or you can email at ultramarathonmindsetpodcast@gmail.com. For the show notes for this episode and more, go to theultramarathonmindset.com and click on the podcast tab. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.